views and opinions expressed on Geeks Under the Influence are that of the panelists and not of our sponsors, Amazon.com and TeePublic. Parental discretion is advised.
You've got Love and Thunder that just came out recently that has that same kind of Ragnarok vibe. It looks almost like a Lisa Frank painting. And then even with, you know, Loki was doing that a bit as well. And then Ms. Marvel with the, what do they call it, Hard Light?
I'm not sure what it's called, but I loved Lisa Frank as a kid. It was every single, like, folder, notebook, pen, pencil, literally anything I could get that was Lisa Frank, I got. I just loved all the colors, so I'm with you. I'm obsessed with, like, these bright color schemes.
What's interesting with Ms. Marvel, speaking of with the fun coloration, is that it is interesting to see a new youthful character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean, we've seen 36,000 different iterations of Spider-Man, but to have another teen hero in the grouping, some of the most formative stories are the ones from, you know, a person growing up, you know, a person being a child at the beginning of the story and then going through these trials and finding themselves in adulthood at the end of that story. And to see what they've done with Kamala in this series has been really intriguing, to see her navigate between being an American teen and being a religious and cultural minority in America as well, and a superhero. It's rad.
She's got a lot going on. No, I think you're so right. Right, like having someone who's a brown, like not only just like a girl, like a woman, a young woman. She's also brown. She's also Muslim. These are things that are, I think, less so now than, let's say, 2 decades ago.
Sure.
Things now are a little less contentious, but still are not always viewed upon as, like, favorable traits to have. So having someone portrayed in, like, a positive light and just opening up this sort of culture to such a broad fan base, I think is... I think it's great. I was really thrilled about it.
I was as well. I was fortunate enough to get a heads up from friends that the Ms. Marvel comic was coming out. A friend that got a chance to kind of read a couple pages said, you need this book. You need to get this book. It's really good. And I read the first issue and then just started collecting after that. Because it tells a story that I can't tell. Because it gives me insight into stuff that I'm not familiar with. You know, I think that's the whole thing that makes content exciting, is when it teaches you something new. It introduces you to something new. It's like why people watch documentaries, why people watch and listen and read these stories. So the idea of, you know, there being fans out there that they say they can't connect with the character, so they're not involved in the story, I feel like there's something not broken with them. I think there is actually a conversation we had about how people are consuming content, because we have so much. You don't have to hear those stories about other people. You don't have to gain insight anywhere. You can stay in your little bubble. But I feel like the most valuable stories I've ever heard and seen in my life are the ones that tell me something that I can't experience on my own.
I completely agree. Like, when I hear people say that, my initial reaction is sort of like, not quite anger, but it's just like, what are you talking about? You can't relate. But then when I like think about it a little bit more, I just really end up feeling kind of sad because I know my perspective. I know what my life is like as a woman, as a brown woman, as a Muslim woman. I know what that life is like for me, but I don't know what life is like for, you know, a black teen growing up. Yep. I don't know what life is like for, I don't know, an older white man. I just don't know what these experiences are like.
Well, I feel like everybody's got a good idea of like what an older white man's life is like, because that's pretty much what the rest of the content out there is like.
Okay, fair. Maybe not my best example, but you see my point.
Yeah, you watch a couple Judd Apatow movies and throw in Swingers, and then you're good to go. That's pretty much it.
But essential viewing.
Exactly. We are talking about Ms. Marvel on this episode of Geeks Under the Influence. We're going to be digging into, well, a whole lot to be discussed. The original comic book, the adaptation into the series on Marvel. It's a conversation about culture in America and how navigating being a superhero and the trials and tribulations that come with that, and how that mirrors growing up as a teenager and all the trials that you go through that way as well. So I am excited to get into the content. So welcome to Geeks Under the Influence, all things Ms. Marvel. Welcome!
Woo! Woo! Come as it were and shall be a
I'm very honored to have some first-timers here on Geeks Under the Influence to help me discuss this this content here, this Ms. Marvel show that's coming out. That definitely has a lot of mixed feelings about it, which is something we are going to get into pretty much right away. But before we start, from the Manufictioners Club podcast, we've got Zaheen and Sean here.
Hello. It's so good to be here.
Thank you for having us on, Mike.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on. A friend of ours, Sophia, that has written for GUI before and was able to hook us up, which is great because this is a really interesting topic here, talking about the progression of Marvel in general. We've talked on previous episodes that there was a, I don't want to throw it all in his cart, but there was a executive by the name of Ike Perlmutter. There was a big challenge in the early days of Marvel with growing the diversity on screen. He was anti female-led and minority-led shows and movies early on. Eventually, Feige basically going to Disney, and it's like, it's him or me. I can't answer him anymore, and him getting kind of pushed slowly away from everything. And since that's happened, you've gotten the Black Panthers, and you've gotten the Captain Marvels, and you know these series as well with Lady Hawkeye and Ms. Marvel, and it's becoming more and more diverse. And I guess the question I want to start with on this episode before we continue much further is the increased diversity within Marvel. Do you see Ms. Marvel and its treatment of the character as having done it organically? That introspective look at like a person of minority culture and religion and age even in America, and how that informs the story. Did it feel shoehorned in or pushy, or did it feel like it was an organic conversation?
I just think that with the show in general, I think it focused very much on, well, first of all, I would just like to say I love having the representation.
Sure.
So even if it is a sort of stereotypical, quote unquote, representation of, you know, what a brown Muslim family is like, at least it's something.
Yeah.
It's a start. I will say my one issue was, you know, of course Kamala has strict parents, you know, of course she has the parents who are like, okay, well, you need to focus on your future. You need to just, you know, whatever, instead of just being a kid, right?
Sure.
That's something that I feel like, I mean, it's a stereotype for a reason. A lot of young brown people experience that, but is it kind of, I don't know. I mean,
yeah. That's the kind of what I was looking at. And it's not something I can answer. It's tricky that you want to portray commonalities that a lot of people can, you know, identify within a group. Mm-hmm. But if you do it too hard, then it can come off as shoehorning or.
Yeah.
So it's a really tricky line to draw, which unfortunately, like with, you know, white male culture being the dominant force, it doesn't suffer the same problems where it's like, we like barbecues and our backs being scratched. You know, it's just, it can be the dumbest thing ever.
I get it because in a way, like, I know I love my parents. I can definitely relate to having strict parents. Sure. I can definitely relate to having religious parents. But I can also relate to having, you know, I think towards the end, Kamala's mom especially starts to accept what's happening, right? So I can definitely relate to, you know, my parents aren't, they're not just like, they don't have blinders on. It's not just, well, it's my way or the highway. They're also flexible people. So sure. I'm glad that there was a bit of that was sprinkled in as well.
But absolutely.
I think, you know, there's already the perspective that, like, you know, brown parents, Muslim parents, they're always super religious. They're always super strict. And I feel like stuff like this just tends to enforce that. So I don't know. I had some mixed feelings about it, but I think overall positive because I was just happy to see someone like me.
Sure. Yeah.
I took it a little bit differently and not surprisingly, but I really enjoy the fact that they, in addition to making it a story about a Muslim girl growing up in Jersey City, they also made it very much an immigrant story. Mm-hmm. Having having lived in New York City a long time, having gone to school near New York City and meeting lots of kids who grew up in immigrant households, that was the same story. It was exactly everything you just described, Zahin. It's, we have to be strict because you have to think about your future. And, you know, we sacrificed everything to get here and we can't let you go out and party and, you know, lose your identity and become this, you know, sort of loose cannon American teenager who just goes off and does whatever she wants. So I actually really appreciated that they did take sort of those same things that you, Zahin, experience as a stereotype of Muslim parents, brown parents. And I thought they did a really nice job of transferring that into the overall immigrant experience while maintaining a lot of the same cultural references, like the festivals, the bazaar that they go to in Jersey City in the show. So I thought they did a good job of blending it, but that's my point of view.
Well, I would tend to agree, only that you're talking about introducing not just a character, which is already heavy lifting in a first season. You have to introduce their origin story, which is already a lot of work, and all the auxiliary characters, the siblings, the parents, the friends, the villains, the whole world that you're creating. But in that, you're also trying to tell backstory and entire culture at the same time. So
it's not easy.
I don't think there is a way to do it perfectly. I mean, there's been the most deftly done movies and shows, but for the most part, there is going to be a little bit of a clunkiness to that, because in this show, we're talking about the partition, which I knew until a Doctor Who episode better explained it to me. I knew the basic idea of what happened with the partition, like the big in this year kind of level of knowledge, without any kind of real insight into how damaging this was to families. Then Doctor Who helped inform me of that a little bit more. And then, of course, this show as well. But also reading into it, I don't know how you tell this story without having to go, okay, listen, back in, you know, and then have like basically a history lesson for those unfamiliar. It's like when the Watchmen series came out and they talked about the Tulsa bombings and stuff, mm-hmm. that a lot of people were unfamiliar with that because we just don't get taught that stuff in American schools.
That's not at all.
Never brought up. So you kind of have to throw in history lessons as well. Though the out-of-country visit was a little clunky at times, I felt like there was kind of a necessity there also at the same time to kind of backfill the story of, you know, this family and also what this family has been through that brought them to the States in the first place, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think, like you said, just people aren't taught stuff like this. I wouldn't have known anything about this or, you know, I'm Bangladeshi, not Pakistani, but... I wouldn't have known anything about, you know, partition or the Bangladesh's independence from Pakistan, if not for being Bangladeshi, right? And like learning it as a kid. I'm sure that a million other versions of this story have happened throughout history that I don't know of because we just don't get taught it in schools.
Sure.
So to that end, yeah, I think I agree. It probably was a little clunky the way that they did it in the show, but I agree. It's definitely a necessity. And I'm glad that it was done. I don't know if within six episodes, there was any way to do it any more seamlessly, right? They didn't give themselves a lot of buffer room.
Yeah. And I know that this suffered, like a lot of the shows suffered. So I watched this video where they overlapped the filming time that these shows had that started before COVID and then had that huge like year break and then picked up again. And this was filming at the same time that WandaVision was filming. At one point, like the tail end of WandaVision filming was the beginning of filming of this. That's how compressed all this filming was. So they may have wanted 8 episodes mm-hmm. or 10, but because of the, you know, the craziness that we've been through over the past couple of years, we ended up with 6. And 6 episodes to give all of that information is a lot, is a whole lot. And I felt the pangs of that definitely in this series. Not to say I didn't enjoy it. I very thoroughly enjoyed this series, but it is tough when you're compressing everything into that shorter amount of time.
Unrelated to the specific story, the whole 6-episode format, I think, has hurt several of the shows on Disney Plus. And I've wondered if it's an overcorrection for the bloated 13-episode format of the Marvel shows on Netflix, because those definitely got saggy in the middle and should have been more like 8 to 10 in most cases.
I think 8 to 10 is the sweet spot.
direction.
Yeah, like the 8 to 10 episode arcs on shows that I've watched, that seems about perfect, where you at most have maybe one lag episode. Like in season 3 of Stranger Things was the going to Pittsburgh side story. Was
Yeah, that was really...
It was
what, like, was that?
Anyway, I'm back with eyeliner. And it's... That aside, 8 to 10 I think is a great balance, and 6 episodes. This story needed more, especially with how much heavy lifting it was doing. But I think we still got, and partially because of the performances, I think we still got some pretty well fleshed out characters. You've got, of course, Kamala, who's the most important, and the actress, I'm forgetting her name, I'm a fan now.
Ivana Valani,
yes. She is incredible and so charming. And the fact that has never acted before and got this on a whim because she was a huge Ms. Marvel fan is everything. That's so charming. She is Kamala, basically. That's,
Wouldn't be surprised if she was writing fan fiction either, right?
Right. An example of not hiring a 25-year-old to play a 16-year-old.
Really?
She's actually a teenager when they started.
Luckily, that 90s 36-year-old playing a high school senior thing is just not happening anymore.
Thank goodness.
I just want to see the footage of the Marvel executives drooling as she comes in and she's charming and does a great read, but then also talks about, oh, I have this picture of me from years ago dressed as the character and I'm a huge fan. And they're like, oh, this is like just counting the money of how perfect a story that is to spin on promotion and stuff. So it was a perfect fit. And her family felt very, the mom kind of was a little heavy-handed at times, but overall was a decent character. The father was great. Brother was great. Like his fiance. Most of the family felt loving and felt like a unit. It definitely did pretty well. But I wanted to, throw it to Zaheen a little bit on it. I don't know how much that story being told on screen is just kind of a generalization, or how much of that is just kind of the ebbs and flows of culturally of a family that's kind of, first and second generation and of different levels of maybe of the same faith, but different levels of devotion to the faith. And I saw that with Kamala still being of the faith, but like less inclined than her brother was, who was slightly more chill than the parents were. Mm-hmm. So did that kind of ring true?
I think that is actually one of the most accurate depictions of what, like the modern immigrant Muslim, at least brown Muslim family is in America, right? Like I can speak to my own family, right?
Sure.
Like my sister and I are not as religious as my parents are, but my parents have people who are more religious than them, like their brothers and sisters. Some of them are more religious, some of them less so. So there's really just like varying sort of levels of that kind of thing. But what I thought there was a really good emphasis on was the emphasis on the family unit as like in general. Like one really big thing in our culture is that family is quite literally the most important thing. And that's sure. where you have the most emphasis in your life when it comes to person-to-person interactions. Sometimes to a detriment,
sure,
where it's like, oh, you can't do anything because it'll look bad for your family and you have to put your family before you. But I think actually more and more, I see a lot more people of more like Bengali, Indian, Pakistani people of my generation, the first generation Americans, more or less being able to sort of take their own lives in their own hands and their parents being supportive after. Maybe some struggle, but their parents ending up being really supportive. So that's actually, I actually thought that was a really great thing that they did in the show.
I love the turn with the mother at the end when she realized, okay, this story is real. The stars to the train were real. And then it was like a switch where it's okay. I mean, please don't die, but also like you have these superpowers and stuff. Like, yeah, you should help people. And That's pretty great.
That's the biggest thing, right? Like, I think that I really, really appreciate it because it's true. Our parents are strict, but they want the best for us. And the reason they're strict is because they love us so much. It comes from a place of love. It doesn't come as, I mean, this is again, also generalization.
Sure.
But I was going to say it doesn't come from a place of control. It's truly they want the best for you, because there have been so many things in my life where my parents wanted one thing and I wanted another. And then once they accepted the other thing that I wanted, they were all in. They said, okay, you know what? This is what you decide. What if this is what you want, then we're supporting you 100%. Whatever you need, we got you. And having that kind of just all in support is mm-hmm. really nice, even if you kind of have to fight for it in these brown families.
Well, you look at the story of people immigrating to this country are as diverse as the people that are immigrating to this country. But one thing that is a common theme is that when you leave everything behind to move to a totally different culture, it's usually for a reason. And there's usually a lot of trauma that comes from that. There's a pretty detrimental reason for the move. So there is this trauma that happens couple generations before that then slowly takes those generations to heal from. And that's where you're seeing stories like, to a lesser degree, Ms. Marvel. I think there was a more like friendly approach to that conversation as opposed to like the conversations in Everything Everywhere All at Once and Encanto about generational trauma that were, I mean, crushing. Crushing.
You know, I actually still haven't watched Everything Everywhere All at Once because I don't feel that I'm in the mental state ready, like, for it, because
it's one of the most incredible films I've ever seen. I mean,
I'm very excited to watch it. I just haven't.
Unbelievable, but it's heavy. I mean, it's heavy in the right ways, but it's going to take a lot out of you. Yeah. At the level of like the first time I saw Endgame, and I was just like a husk afterwards, and like laying there just empty inside.
What have I just witnessed?
Dehydrated from tears. But on a more playful part of this conversation, I did want to talk a little bit about the change to Kamala's powers in this versus the comics. She is a polymorph in the comics, which means basically can shift her body shape and size. She can embiggen, which is like her tagline in the comics and stuff. And basically big fists, big feet, can grow really big sometimes. And it's very fun to see on, and actually can shift into people too. At time. I think that was the first thing that happened in the comics. She ends up turning into Carol Danvers for a second. That's different. It's very, I feel like tied it in a little bit closer at the end of the series, but like, what did you think going in where it was hard light is what they called it, that it all came from this bangle that she wore on her wrist. That's I think the main controversy that I've seen for the most part with this series.
I was gonna say the bangle felt contrived to me, but I'll let Sean speak more to that.
Okay.
Unlike you, Mike, I did not have a friend who was plugged in enough to tune me into Ms. Marvel when it first arrived in 2013. But as a result of the series, I've gone back and read the initial five or six issues. And so I think Marvel did something really tricky, but really interesting with the way they changed her powers. Mm-hmm. Because, and this I'm going to go off on a little bit of a discursion. So
sure.
please entertain me.
It's not the first time. So
that was me buckling up.
Yeah. On a nerd show? Never.
I tend to, not always, but tend to read teenage superpower stories where, you know, adolescent boy or girl achieves superpowers as a metaphor for puberty and adolescence in general. You know, that you're developing your body, you're becoming a different person, your physical, you know, your knowledge of your physical being is changing, and you're identifying yourself in different ways. And I think in the comics, having her powers be very physical. And like you just described, you know, she changes her size, she changes her appearance, she makes different parts of her body bigger or smaller. I felt really emphasized that. But I think on a Disney Plus show, and Disney Plus now has The Punisher and Jessica Jones
sure.
and some very, very hard, dark adult material.
Which is so funny to me when it's like The Punisher, now on Disney, is a little, a little just John Bernthal going,
or you know, in season two, walking in the Hulk, spoiler alert, walking into the room with Jigsaw and not saying a word and just shooting him in the face.
Yeah, yeah.
Which that visual never left me, but I feel like for the Disney show, they were trying to accomplish a few different things that were not part of the comic. One, tie her into the larger universe of magic, which I think is what they did with the Nord dimension. They wanted to make it something that make her power something that she had to sort of develop into having a facility with, because in the comics, she just, you know, she does learn, but it's always physical. Whereas in the show, it's this hard light, like you described. So she's got to learn how to project it, how strong to make it. So she's got to sort of develop a familiarity with her powers. And then finally, it's sort of toning down the adolescent, you know, puberty sort of metaphor, I think, for a broader audience and
sure.
and not making it so physical. So I thought they did a decent job, although I'm with Sahin, the bangle felt a little contrived by the end of the show, only because, and again, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched the final episode, you know, they basically say that she's a mutant and that the bangle unlocked her powers, but maybe wasn't even necessary.
I agree with you completely on that, is that I am open to powers being changed out of necessity. They are kind of pushing away from the Inhumans, which after that series, Wolf, which by the way was also Ike Perlmutter's doing, as from mentioned earlier. I understand getting away from the Inhumans. The Terrigen Mists aren't there. That's not part of the thing. But okay, you've got, she's a Noor or clandestine. She is a mutant. And she also has a magic bangle. So, like, there's three origins of this character. You need one. That's like in Underworld, where it's like you're a vampire and a werewolf. Like, you get one. You get one origin. You don't get multiple origins. So, yeah, I agree that was a lot. But
Zaheen has informed me that djinns are not generally, like, positive characters either. No. So giving her sort of a djinn related origin.
Yeah, that's something I learned about from this series when I was seeing some of the blowback on social media. And yeah, Zaheen, if you want to kind of dig into that a little bit.
I mean, it was just like a little confusing to me is all. There was like a little bit of dissonance. I feel like I grew up learning like djinn are bad, and or if they're not like bad evil, they're just generally not really positive being.
Yeah.
So then to see that associated with a hero, I was like, wait a second. I was like, I feel like there's a little something that's off here, but you know, I'll just look past it. I'm not a writer on here, so what am I gonna do? Who am I?
And well, that's what's tricky too, is we were talking earlier about how you're trying to have a kind of generalized conversation because you want to have like a shared experience from the group that you're aiming for, whether it be teens or guys that look like me, which is most comic book shows, let's be honest, is like chubby bearded men in their 40s. You got to generalize a little bit, and you do have examples of like mythologies and these cultural stories being tweaked to be something that isn't magical, as science or as some different version of. You got like vampires aren't actually vampires, they're this, or you've got like Thor and the other gods of Viking mythology that are being played with as well. But it is tricky when you go into the area of like, are we going to have a like a Jewish golem at some point? Like, where is the line where it's like not okay to play with those toys? Is a really tricky conversation. After reading some of those, you know, the backstory on the djinn and how it relates to
I think what is also interesting is that Noor, like the word Noor in Arabic means light, I believe, like light, like divine light type of situation. So to have like Noor and djinn and the juxtaposition of the two is very interesting to me.
They try to explain it away in the series with the, like, if Thor landed in that part of the world, they'd call him a djinn too. And I'm like, calm down. That's like, that's
I mean, I don't know about that one.
Yeah, I don't know about, yeah, that's, I mean, they really tried there. I saw what they were trying to do. I just don't think that quite, I think it's because that wasn't part of the original story. Like, it, there's plenty of really bad tracking on characters in comic books that their origins are really bad, like Doctor Strange and Iron Fist, and basically any white guy that can do kung fu in the comic books is really bad. And you got like the Legend of Fu Manchu, which is like Yellow Menace stuff that's just really, really, really cringy.
Yeah, not
cringy. You don't have to find more stuff to make cringy.
No, there's a wealth of opportunity if you want cringe.
And like Ms. Marvel came out in 2013. And like, this is a newer comic. You don't have to go digging for like weird appropriating like morphings of history. Yeah, so I don't know. I think the Jin thing was a misstep. I think in the next, and the response has not been great to it either. I think they're going to lean more towards the clandestine or the Noor as the term moving forward.
I think that probably makes the most sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. That's why I'm kind of excited to see what happens in season two, because there's all this heavy lifting has been done now. You've got the introductions of these characters. You've got a little bit of a baseline about like what her family looks like and what that dynamic looks like and what she feels about her powers and superheroes. And now I'm excited to see what they can do with that. That's going to be the interesting part.
Yeah.
But we are going to take our break.
And the next time we see her is in the Marvels, right?
The Marvels. Yep, that is the next one is in the Marvels, which you got three different characters that they've introduced now that are very different places, story-wise and also locationally. So I'm interested to see how that all works out. But let's take a break. Yeah. When we come back, we'll talk about our sponsors a little and then get back into more conversation about season one of Ms. Marvel. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Coming straight from the mouths of madness, I'm Lowdown.
I'm F.U. Hunter.
Do you love horror?
We fucking do.
So this is a podcast dedicated to all things in cinematic horror. We're talking movies, television, composers, special effects artists. We're going to fucking cover it.
So if you love horror,
embrace the madness.
My name is Amy Bogard.
And I'm Mike the Hobbit.
And we are the hosts of Deeply Upsetting, where we use our expertise to answer your most upsetting hypothetical quandaries, such as, what non-wiggin animal deserves wings?
And what body part deserves a secret mouth?
Which cryptid is the worst roommate?
These questions and more that plague you will be answered on Deeply Upsetting, available anywhere you get your podcasts and at GUIpodcast.com.
In a world of blockbuster movies, there is another dimension.
The dimension of schlock cinema. Join us at Beautiful Disasters on a journey into the fringe territory of B-movie abandon.
We review the flicks that are forgotten or underappreciated to give them a proper place in the annals of celluloid history.
I'm the Groots.
F.U. Hunter.
Your guides at Beautiful Disasters. Come along with us for a fun ride.
May the schlock be with you.
In a world with too many reboots and remakes,
two men will stop at nothing to make it even worse.
Join Mike the Hobbit and Tondi as they play by their own rules while pitching new takes on some of your favorite and least favorite films and TV shows. What podcast would dare to bring this upon the world?
This is Smack My Pitch.
Hey guys, Scotty P here with Smash.
On your left.
And we are
the Geek Fathers.
That's right, bringing all the trials and tribulations of being a geeky parent.
So welcome to our world.
And as always, join us
or cry.
We're back for the second half of Geeks Under the Influence, all things Ms. Marvel Season 1. But before we continue on with that, let's talk about our sponsors a little bit. First off, of course, is Amazon.com. You know it. You begrudgingly use it for all of your delivery needs. Understand it's not the greatest choice in the world nowadays, but if you absolutely have to get some toilet paper and you're not going to have a chance to get to the store, Amazon.com. Just make sure you go through the link at GYpodcast.com. That way we get some of the money that you're spending on this product instead of Amazon. So your way to stick it to the man is to still give the man money, just slightly less, like 3% of that goes to us. So yeah, it's not really effective rebellion, but you know, at least we can afford new microphones sometimes. The way we really want you to support us, though, the most effective means is tpublic.com. Tpublic, you know it. T-shirts, stickers, buttons, baby onesies, laptop covers, all sorts of options for you for all the designs from all the different shows on the Geeks Under the Influence Network. gypodcast.com/store to hit that tpublic store and pick out of the over 40 designs that we have available in our store. Inside jokes from this show, from Beautiful Disasters, Smack My Pitch Up, From the House of Madness, Beautiful Disasters, Geek Fathers, all the shows on the network. There's inside jokes, different designs that we've done for different episodes, different logos, all available through TeePublic, on sale all the time. If they're not on sale, when you check it out, wait a couple days. It's like every week, half of the week is on sale. So don't buy it full price. I'm telling you, we make more money when it's full price. Screw that. Wait until it's on sale and just buy more crap. There's so many fun designs. There is a new Jurassic Park design that we just dropped on there, the dinosaur trainer t-shirt that we have available. And we just dropped a Stranger Things design on there as well. So check those out. And that really does help us out. And also, buy them for your friends. There's going to be a baby out there that needs a baby onesie that has Live, Laugh, Love spelled out in the intestines of a human centipede. So that is the best way to represent GUI, is with really bad humor. TeePublic. And on to our regularly scheduled conversation. Normally here, we would do a what we're drinking for an episode. I thought, especially since we're virtual, so the idea of shares would be a little bit more challenging to like get that stuff to you in time and everything. Also, us having a direct conversation about like a Muslim family, I felt was like a little weird to pair a booze with, since that's not traditionally something that happens. So we're going to go ahead and forego that on this episode and just jump right back into the meat of it a little bit. So when you last left us, we were discussing Kamala and her family and her powers, primarily, was our last little bit of conversation, and how that was altered from the original and the newer stuff. The second half is always a little bit more off the rails and a little more fun. I really wanted to get into, are we going to see Kamala become a more like, how do I put this without being gross? A more adult character, as because she's in her teens now, but she's not far from adulthood, and she does have interests in boys, but you haven't seen it more than just adorable puppy dog eyes and like wanting to hold hands is about the extent of where it's gotten to. I even in the comics, I never really look at Kamala as being a sexualized character, which I've really appreciated. How do you think they're going to try to navigate that on this show? Because you know, this is one of the few Marvel characters we've seen that is a child when we meet them. And it's always a hard transition to being an adult character.
And they've already let Peter Parker have a girlfriend.
They always portrayed him as just like a charming dork. Like even if he wasn't being sexualized necessarily, there was definitely still like 35-year-old women being like, that 16-year-old boy is my boyfriend. Energy.
Which, in hindsight, very bizarre, no?
Not great. Definitely. No. Not awesome.
No.
But with Kamala, I think they're handling that even with even more gentle kid gloves. And I appreciate that. But also, yeah, that navigation is going to be tough.
I think there are sort of two ways that it can go, just based off of how brown girls grow up in America. So the first way is the way that, you know, it's supposed to go, where, you know, she is not as religious as her parents, but she mm-hmm. stays within that. She doesn't really date as much. She has people obviously she's a person with feelings, right?
Sure.
So she has feelings for people, and that gets handled in a nice, like, religious sense. They, you know, meet a couple of times. In Islam, the way you can do like halal dating is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
The way you do that is by going on dates with like a chaperone. So like you meet this person and if you've watched Bridgerton, it's kind of like that, where like you'll go for a walk in the park and your chaperones will like be walking behind you together, chatting, just making sure that nothing untoward happens, right?
That's it's really a cultural thing for a lot of different cultures, actually. Like we, for 4th of July, we decided in true patriotic spirit to watch Good Morning Vietnam.
right?
And even in that movie, they have where he's on a date that is chaperoned, that like the entire family is kind of like hovering back as he's on this date.
Yeah.
That's very old school, but that is definitely a number of different cultures have that kind of approach.
Yeah, and I know like that still happens. That definitely happens today. I know people who have, you know, dated like that, right? And it's been fine, right? Because they're in happy, loving marriages and it worked out beautifully, right? So whatever works for people. But the other way that I think it could go, if they want to make her a little messy, is she does the typical, I don't want to call it typical. She does the thing where she dates behind her parents' back and she's like a little afraid to tell them before anything gets too serious because parents will either be like, no, not great. Or, oh, you found this nice boy that you like. Okay, great. That's awesome. Let's get you married so that everything is nice and good to go and you can do whatever you want. Right. So I think personally, and I don't want this to again come off as a stereotype if they do it this way.
Sure.
But I love the idea of having her be a little messy. I think it really humanizes her in a way. She's not like this perfect girl or anything, which I really appreciate because no one is perfect.
Sure. I don't think you'd have to go too hard. It's not like the one episode of Ms. Marvel where she tries ketamine. Like you don't have to go like shoot for the stars there. You can do something like she has like a beer and she feels a little bit dizzy, you know, like
Miss Marvel goes to Bergain.
Yeah, right. You'd have something just normal after school special level of like she tried a cigarette, you know, something really just still family not stoked, but it's not like, you know, she doesn't have to go to Miss Marvel goes to rehab. It's not.
The relationship that's hanging out there just waiting to be addressed very much in a, you know, moonlight sort of situation is Bruno. Bruno clearly has a thing for Kamala.
Oh, definitely. And man,
Bruno's waiting.
Bruno was such a sad sack character in this series. He's just like, as something that I can definitely attest to from my youth is that, talk about like privileged energy was the idea of like, I was nice to this girl, so she should have to date me. It's that idea that just because you're nice, then that's all it takes for a person to like, well, why wouldn't you date me? Well, because they're not attracted to you. Like, it's not rocket
it
surgery.
Can be friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's the idea that part of the thing that was a turnoff that I learned later in life from having these conversations with women that I was interested in, like, say, high school, and then just became good friends with, is that, yeah, trying that hard isn't attractive. Like, it's weird. It's like, do you want a soda?
That's
I can get you a soda. Yeah, it's a little bit much. So that's something I learned just from experience is that doesn't mean you can't treat people well, but being a person's servant isn't like saying that you could be a good partner. So
no, it's a little scary, right? Like the word partner implies a partnership instead of like a idol worship sort of situation.
Yeah, exactly. And Bruno was definitely like, oh, like he was learning a different language for this girl. Like he was, and everything about the culture and like doing research on the djinn and everything just. Please. Yeah.
Like, how did he find out that, how was he the one, how did he come into the, come to the knowledge of her being a mutant? Like, how did he find that out? Did he like steal some of her hair and like get it tested?
Well, there was a mention of him analyzing something, but I'm also, this is a fucking 16-year-old.
What? That too.
Like, I had smart friends when I was in high school. Like I was part of the AP programs and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, we were all smart as shit. There was not a single one being like, that gene looks mutated. There's not. That's not
let me compare this to the human genome and see what I can get. And you'd have like, again, like another beautiful mind scenario where you're just like, trying to figure out what's happening.
Like, I didn't just...
He builds a like, a security system for Kamala's family, like from parts.
Oh, yeah. He builds an Alexa. He builds like an off-brand Alexa. Alexis, they just gave me one. Like, literally, I got in the mail from Amazon, they're like, an Alexa, and I called them, they're like, I'll just keep it. No, I don't want this. It's, you can just have it. Like, they're confused. Like, no,
they want to listen to you.
They do.
They're trying to make sure the ads are good.
I have four podcasts. You can listen to me. It's not difficult. So, yeah.
Do you have the problem where if you talk about her, I don't want to even say the name, like she like perks up and starts listening, and then you've ordered like a random, like, I don't know, a pack of pens or something bizarre.
No, I'm very careful about the smart stuff in the house, because, well, I have friends in IT, and if you have a friend in IT, you know that they have a computer from like 18 years ago, and just keep upgrading it and have nothing voice activated, and they have a phone that's a flip phone with no, they are so backwards, because they're like, smart technology will ruin the world. So I've listened to them enough to know that at least nothing that is always listening.
Yeah.
But yeah, with the smart technology, there's nothing that is just constantly listening. Like, I have a button I have to push or something to hold down in order for the smart thing. We have a Fire TV, but it's a button to push down to have Alexa answer any questions. So that way there's no constant listening stuff. I won't do it. I'm too.
See her in my back. She's right. Hold on. Right here. Oh, she's always listening. So I can't say the name. Otherwise, she's like, hello.
But like Amazon,
what are you saying?
Like, if they're not literally just giving it to you, they're like, it is $12. Even $12, hook it into your phone and it will work. Like, it works anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone should have it. Just have one. An Echo Dot. Here you go.
What are they planning?
Yeah. So the fact that he built his own, I mean, without doing any conspiracy theory stuff, he was like, because they're listening. You know, he was just, nope, for fun. Let me build this AI.
If Alexas are listening, oh my God. Oh no, she didn't say anything. Cool. If Alexas are listening, then who's to say that Bruno's Alexa Lite is not listening?
That's true.
Something to think about.
They do rely on the surveillance aspect of it in the first episode.
So.
Or they plan to, anyway.
That's
when they were going to go to the Avengers Con. He was like, well, I'll keep an eye on when he's going into your room to check on you.
Oh, right. Yeah, because he that's right. He said, like, basically told her outright, yeah, I can spy on you anytime I want. Oh, no.
Yeah, it's kind of so in the industry, we call those red flags.
Yeah, I would say so. Imagine just Bruno just, like, breathing heavy, listening to just, like, creaking noises across the... Oh,
I can't.
No,
we've just gone to a very dark place with Bruno.
Yeah, we don't talk about Bruno. But they got that level of too try hard during the series, and then also the revelation we came to that he's also clearly listening in on Kamala, like sleeping, is a lot. That's a whole lot.
Mortifying, really.
But, you know what? Caltech's great idea. Go other side of the country.
Why don't you go?
Great. I don't know what to do with Bruno in this series. Like, he seemed kind of unnecessary for the most part. Like, he was there as, like, the sidekick, but, like...
He's the man in the chair.
Yeah, to a degree, I guess. But he didn't end up being, like... super necessary. I don't know. He just weirded me out a little bit. I think the mirror was too clear from my, like, junior high school years. I was looking at, like, please like me. It's just not too much. But with the red dagger character, it's really handy that he had a friend that worked at the docks to help Cameron get away. That was very. Very,
very handy.
Plot devices.
Yeah. Hey, do you have one of them hot plot devices? I actually do. Yeah, let me make a call. That's very handy. I feel like the Cameron's mom, whose name I'm forgetting.
Najma.
I think you're right. Yeah.
That's right.
She seemed like she was basically twirling a mustache through the series. Yeah. Like, she was like, oh, no, I want to help. Never mind, I'll kill you in, like, a split second.
Do you know what's really funny about that, though, is that, okay, I mean, I have no idea if this is what they were trying to go for here, but in Hindi serials, like soap operas, everything is extremely heavy-handed, where there's always, like, an evil auntie who's, like, trying to, I don't know, like, kill the new daughter-in-law because she wants to get her nephew's money. I don't know. There's always something crazy going on.
Okay.
And it's always like, oh no, don't worry, I'll help you pack your suitcase. Meanwhile, she's like like sharpening a knife. She's like, I'm going, I'll come to your house and help you do this. Ha 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 ha. You know, and it's just like very hammy. So I don't know if it was an homage to that somehow, but
it fits.
I don't know. But it was very, it's very heavy handed.
It might as well have had that bum, bum, bum music in the background when she came on screen. It was great.
Yeah.
Cameron in the comics, he's kind of not necessarily a villain always. Sometimes helps out, sometimes doesn't. Is that in-between character, like a Catwoman type character, I guess, that it can be both bad guy and good guy, depending on the circumstances. I feel like they didn't give him enough justification to be a bad guy necessarily. I mean, you can see how he might get radicalized moving forward, possibly, with, you know, all of Damage Control trying to murder him. That can radicalize a person, maybe.
That might do it.
That might do. I mean, historically speaking, when an entire group of people tries to kill another group of people, it tends to radicalize them. I just spitball in there, but
I mean, I don't know. I think you might be crazy.
Yeah, I think
can't be right.
You know, I'm again out of my element. I'm not I'm talking crazy, but
the Department of Damage Control was the bad guy. They were the villains.
No, it was not specifically Damage Control. It was the Karen in charge of that division of Damage Control that was like,
true.
No, I'm going to get them. I know they're up to no good. Just like was ready. And I thought that was actually kind of...
Might as well have been like filming while they were walking.
Yeah,
like,
right.
I'm calling the cops.
I'm calling the cops on your barbecue.
You just jaywalked.
Yeah, right. And I had that kind of energy.
I don't know if you picked up on this, but having entered a mosque once in my life and being told that I had to take my shoes off, I thought it was really interesting the way they very deliberately showed her walking into the mosque with her boots on.
Mm-hmm.
Like to show the level of offense that she was presenting to them and how much disregard she had for their customs and their mores.
Well,
I mean, to make things a little serious, I mean, this is obviously an homage to post 9/11 New York, right? Like mosques getting surveilled, you know, anyone who is South Asian doesn't. Also, this is another crazy thing, right? Like anyone who is Arabic, South Asian, right? They were surveilled pretty heavily when. How does that even make sense?
It doesn't.
The whole Arab world plus South. Like South Asia, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, they're very diverse. Like in and of itself, it's just a very diverse sort of situation. Many different religions,
different ethnicities.
And it's like, what are we doing? And the fact that, you know, like people were like, there were hate crimes against people who were Sikh that went up. It was just like, something got lost here in translation. What? It was just like a very insidious time. And I think, you know, Damage Control was very much like what was an embodiment of this, right? It was symbolic of that, right? And no, it was very much
and it's so sad how actually understated that is compared to the things that you see every day on the internet. Like when Ms. Marvel first came out, I saw posts on like Marvel pages that people were posting. It was like, they got to make it where it's like it's a Muslim character and an Indian character and she's gay, and I'm like, whoa, she's not gay. And they're like, yeah, she was gay in the movie. And I'm like, you mean America Chavez? Wrong Brown. Like, that's the level of like, I don't know, it's one of the, you know, it's got that kind of energy where
no.
People want internet access for everyone.
Oh, right?
No, I don't know. I just think it's really crazy when they're like, I can't believe they put all of these identities in one person. They're just trying to, you know, take things off the checklist and without even the thought that there are many people out there who actually do sort of quote unquote check off all of those sort of like identities.
Well, it's people used to being catered to for everything, is that used to seeing people that look like them and stories that they can identify with and situations that they've dealt with in their own lives, you know, that they aren't used to stories not being for them. And you know what? That doesn't mean you can't watch it. That just means that you have to be able to enjoy a story about somebody else's experiences. And That used to be something easy. That's changed so dramatically.
I don't want a virtue signal here, but I grew up in the 80s, and I was a very big fan of still am a big fan of tennis, and one of my favorite players was Martina Navratilova, a blonde lesbian from Eastern Europe, and I loved her all the same because she was just a compelling human being, and it had nothing to do with, you know, trying to identify with her or having her represent me. Like, she's just fucking badass, and I loved it.
That's why I feel like I was saying before, like, I feel so sad now. I get really angry at first, and then I'm like, no, actually, it's just really sad when these people close themselves off to stories that aren't from people who look like them, just because there's so much richness in other people's lives and other people's experiences. It's very sad when they're like, well, I can't relate to this because this is about a girl and girls are totally different. I hate girly things. Yeah. And it's just like, I don't know.
Do you think you're
going to
turn into a 16-year-old girl if you end up watching like Mean Girls? Like, that's not... Also, Mean Girls rocks. That's a great
movie.
Mean
Girls is amazing.
It's such a good movie. But like, yeah, I agree that you have to be able to... It's like, I'm not a fan of like... balladeer, like female singers and stuff. It's not that I think they're bad or anything. It's just
no.
Not
that's
my style
what you think,
music.
Isn't it? No.
Yeah, it's true. They're bad. They're bad, and anybody who thinks they're good is bad.
Yeah, but no. Like, well, obviously,
I will defend to my grave that Adele has some of the most like jarring vocal like talents in the world. It's like impossibly talented. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. You don't have to necessarily have it be your thing to appreciate the good in it. Like that it's well conceived and well executed.
That's the thing. I feel like I think you hit the, you know, you hit the nail on the head. That's the saying, right? You hit the nail on the head where I think nowadays when people, if you don't like something, then if you say a positive thing about the thing you don't like, then you're seen as a hypocrite. Where in reality, you don't have to like the thing to appreciate its genius or merit or anything.
I was on a group page on Facebook earlier for horror movies and stuff, and somebody posted a screenshot where somebody defended them to somebody that was gatekeeping. They were like, "Oh, I love the Paranormal Activity movies," and they're like, "Well, if you had any good taste in movies, then you would like." And somebody was like, "You know, you can like different types of horror movies." And
snore.
So somebody posted that, being like, "This is the way to do it. Like, gatekeeping is so gross." And this group that is hands down the most gatekeeping and the most nasty group that I belong to on Facebook is like, yeah, gatekeeping's gross. It's so like those people are so dumb, those gatekeepers. Yeah. And then I responded with the meme of the like Muppet looking back and forth thing, the little thing, being like, when the gatekeeping group bats themselves on the back for hating gatekeepers or something. And somebody was like, well, if you hate this group so much, then why are you still here? You know, why don't you just leave? And I was like, you know, you can like some parts of a thing and not all of it. Like, I was getting gatekeeped about pointing out the gate. It was, oh God. Oh, it was,
that's a mess. It's the same thing. If you hate it here so much, why don't you just move? Because there are some things I like.
But again, but you know, with that same thought process, you can't turn it around. That if you don't like Ms. Marvel, why don't you leave? And it's like, no, why do I have to leave? You know, why can't they write better stories or something along those lines? It's not a two-way street.
No.
It's that only certain things are allowed to exist, and other things are bad and wrong and need to go away. There's no value to them. There's no audience for them. They shouldn't exist. It's such a psychotic way of looking at things.
Yeah, it's insane. It's like...
Oh, God. Yeah,
because if you point out that the original Star Wars movie was okay, it's good.
Oh, God forbid.
It was great if you were a kid then, as I was, because it totally changed the way you saw movies and what was possible. But if you watch it today, it's flawed. It's not a perfect film by any means.
I'm obsessed with the original trilogy. I still have a VHS so I can watch them on super special editions and stuff. Have a bunch of action figures in the background somewhere. Star Wars fans are hands down the worst. They are the fucking worst. They like, it makes me not want to be a Star Wars fan because they're so bad. And you know what? The original trilogy, I'm obsessed with it. By no means perfect. It's goofy. It is so friggin' goofy and weird at points, but you love it for its scars. You know, you love it for its missteps. And so then you look at something like Ms. Marvel, where there wasn't anything that was really... Okay, the Jin thing may be a little bit of a misstep, but like the... it's not a perfect show by any stretch, but it's not a bad show. It's a good time. Amon Vellani, the main actress, having never acted before, was so fucking charming and so adorable and so Kamala Khan. And I was like, I'm over the moon that they got such a great actress to portray this character that I love. And that alone makes it worthwhile. I don't know. I was about to say, I don't mean to diatribe, but that's literally why I started a podcast.
Well, that's why we're all here, right?
Yeah, right.
No, but it's true, right? Like, having, I don't know. Just like having these stories get told is just, I don't know. There's just something so fun in it. You don't have to aim for perfection. If you aim for perfection, then everything just ends up falling to shit. Truly.
Yeah.
Like working with what you have. And in their case, it was this 6-episode, you know, time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is ever going to be perfect. And yes, there are some things that were a little like, I'm not so sure about the Jinns, but
yeah.
But still, like, it's representation, first of all. It's a fun show about a young girl, which, when isn't that fun?
Yeah.
Right? It's like you're like lining yourself up for just like fun little misadventures when you have that kind of like show.
I sometimes wish this is a video show because you've got like some jazz hands off to the side, like fun little adventures.
you should see us in the studio with the three hosts.
Oh yeah, I believe it.
There's a lot of movement.
I feel like you're pitching like a Kamala Explains It All sitcom series or something to happen.
Yeah, I gesticulate so much.
She's listening.
There's so much. I don't know. I've like knocked stuff off my tables. Multiple times.
We had to incorporate for myself and also a lot of the other panelists that there's always stuffed animals nearby.
Mm. Mine are in a box right now.
It's my little shark friend for Shark Week.
But not all of them. You can see, this is my Squishmallow. Her name, well.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Yeah. She's the blob over here.
Mm-hmm.
Her name was Emily, but she's a bat, and I don't think Emily is a good name for a bat. That's just me, and I like it when my stuffed animals have the same, like, their name starts with the same letter as the animal name.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So that there's alliteration. So instead of Emily, she's Bemily. She's Bemily the bat, and honestly, I feel like that just works a lot better.
That's great. That's
anyway.
Fantastic.
So that's who I have in my bag. She's the only one I haven't packed yet. There she is.
Nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, we noticed that people were like messing with the mic. I'm not going to do it because I'll have to edit it out later. But like mess with the microphone or tap on the table or pluck things or just little ticks, and it would have to be edited out later. So you put a little plush on the table and then suddenly they're playing with that and just picking at it and it doesn't make any noise. So that was
That's so smart.
Learned the hard way trick of podcasting there.
Wow, that's so smart. Maybe I need to do that. I'm very fidgety, so.
I think anybody that's a creative-minded person, wants to create stuff, wants to make things, is going to have a little bit of that nervous energy. So I think it's important to have something to busy your hands while you're focusing on you know, talking and stuff. So.
Yeah.
Which is my next podcast coming out, Talking and Stuff, you'll find next month, where we are talking and we do stuff. But
sounds riveting, and I can't wait to tune in.
Yeah, I like the specific nature of that show. You know, I think it might be a little too niche, but we'll see.
I mean, there's an audience for everything, right?
Sure. Speaking of, before we say adieu to this audience here listening to this nonsense, we are going to do the last little bit of our show. And that's when we decide to make an effort to improve on the unimprovable. We're talking about making a drunken scene.
Making a drunken scene.
Okay, so so we've got two little scenes from Ms. Marvel, and I think these are both from... I believe this might be the last episode of the season, if I'm correct, that these both of these quotes come from. There's one scene with Agent Deaver and Sheikh Abdullah. Is that Abdullah?
Sheikh Abdullah.
Sheikh Abdullah, yeah. Then there's a Kamala Khan quote. So if there's anybody that wants to do a specific role, I will take what's left from everyone.
I would love to do... Well, I don't want to do an accent, so maybe I'll do Agent Deaver.
Then, Sean, you have the choice between Sheikh Abdullah or Kamala Khan.
I don't know if it's going to be good.
Yeah, I'm aiming for... So, like, if it makes you feel better, I'm aiming for, like, bitchy Valley Girl situation.
Solid. And you know Agent Deaver mm-hmm. was a bitchy Valley Girl in her youth.
Of course.
Definitely. Okay, so...
I was going to spice up the shake with a little Sean Connery.
Okay, all right. Then I get to be Kamala Khan. I'm often mistaken for a teen Muslim girl. Yes, that's...
Listen... It's a mistake anyone could make. I see it personally.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's really in my smile. Really, is where it shines. Okay, so between you two are the first to go in your scene, whenever you're ready.
If you're abetting a potential suspect, no one will be on your side. Shake.
I don't need anyone on my side. I'm not even concerned if God is on my side, as long as I'm on His side. For God. Is always right.
Nice.
Ugh. I don't have time for Quranic quotes. Ugh. Excuse me.
Actually, Missy, that was Abraham Lincoln.
Nice. Yay. That was awesome. Better than the original, I think.
Oh, yeah. Obviously.
Oh, yeah. Clearly. All right. Well, now I have the disservice to this property by doing Kamala Khan. So I will do my... shitty Sylvester Stallone. There we go.
Amazing.
There is no normal. This,
Jesus Christ.
This just us and what we do with what we've been given. Hey.
So why didn't they do that in the original?
Right?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I feel like that was the way to read that line in that show. And I think they just missed an opportunity.
Now I think we all want to see a season two with Sylvester Stallone playing Kamala Khan.
Yeah. I think it would be... I just think that would be genius, personally.
My country for that season.
yo, in biggin.
Oh, great. Fantastic. I'm here for it. That is one thing I do love that they actually incorporated in Big N by the tail end of the series. I feel like her power started to mimic her polymorph powers from the book a little bit closer by the end of the series, which I did appreciate. Although apparently there is time travel. She can time travel to save her own great grandmother, I guess, too, or grandmother or whatever. But
does that not feel contrived as well? That's... Doesn't it?
By the way, time travel. Okay, cool. I guess I don't know
what'll be next.
But I'm down for season two, or what Marvel has been doing is not necessarily maybe a season two as some continuation of the story with a new title or what have you. But the story of Kamala continues in the Marvels that will be hitting theaters. I'm excited about that. Until then, I want to thank the two of you for joining me on this journey through. The newer dimension, I guess. I don't know.
Well, thank you for having us.
Now, you've got a podcast on yourselves that...
I do.
We sure do.
Let's hear about this show. I'm assuming it has some geek elements to it as well.
Safe assumption. Very safe assumption.
Okay.
Rich in geek elements. So as you mentioned at the top of the show, Mike, it's the Manufacturers Club and... there's three of us, Zaheen, myself, and our other co-host who's not here, Carl. And we all come from a product ownership, business analysis, project management background. And we thought it would be fun to deconstruct technology in genre fiction, such as comic books, and walk through like the development life cycle of those technologies, but do it in a fun, freewheeling kind of discussion, similar to what we just did here. And season one was all about the Iron Man armor. So, you know, how does Tony arrive in the situation where he has to create the armor? And, we talk about the differences between Tales of Suspense number 39 and the 2008 movie, and, you know, sort of compare and contrast. And then we go through the whole development of the technology and how he tests it. Some of which you actually see in the movie, which you don't see in the comic book. But like I said, just taking that sort of that discipline of project management, business analysis, and applying it to technology and genre fiction. And our season two is going to be coming out. We haven't decided the exact date, which wish we had before we recorded this.
No, that's fine.
Sometime close to the end of this month of July 2022.
We'll throw on our social media when that's coming out. Give you some exposure there, because I'm interested to take a listen as well. Do you have an idea for what season two is going to be all about, or are you keeping that under wraps? Or
no, we definitely want to publicize it. So it's already been recorded, because we are in different locations. So we got together in New York a few weeks ago and recorded it all.
Nice.
And it is, it's all about Doctor Strange and magic as a type of technology.
Ooh.
And nice.
Sort of pivoting off of Arthur C. Clarke's famous quote that any sufficiently advanced technology would appear as magic. So we went through, you know, spells as apps, and how you would develop those. And if you're a geek and you like freewheeling fun discussions of geeky topics, I think we're a good destination for you.
Nice. Yeah. And where can we find your show?
Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever podcasts are available.
Woo!
We're on Instagram. We're on TikTok. We're on Twitter. We're on, and the most important one of all, we're on Patreon.
Woo. Yeah. Talk about important. I will share some links in our notes for this episode. So that will be grabbable once this episode comes out. Thank you so much. This has been so much fun to break down season one of Ms. Marvel.
Thank you.
Listeners, thank you so much for joining us on this journey. I'm Mike the Hobbit. Join us or die.
Shut the fuck up, Hobbit.
GUIPodcast.com.
No, I'm going to get them. I know they're up to no good.